This is the Telegraph Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar. Today we are in Utrecht.
I'm standing on the start line in Utrecht, just next to the start house where the riders will come one by one to ride the 13.8 kilometre time trial course this afternoon. It's scorching hot, and Daniel Tekle-Heimanot, the Eritrean rider with the MTN Quebec team, has just taken his place on the start line. And there he goes. The 2015 Tour de France is underway.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore. I'm with Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
Daniel Freeb.
Hello.
Where are we, Lionel?
We're exactly where we were this time yesterday. We're outside the conference centre in Utrecht. Can just about see where they'll be dismantling the finish line. We'll be back here again tomorrow morning, won't we? And then we'll be moving out to the Netherlands coast, and then the Tour de France travelling circus gets on its way.
We'll be on the road and it'll feel like the tour is properly... We keep saying that it feels like it hasn't started, but it's when you're travelling from A to B that you really feel like it started. I feel like we've won the inertia prize the last couple of days just by being stuck in this pressure. It's not as bad as being on a boat as we were in Corsica a couple of years ago, but there's a sort of lifeless, you know, you're not moving anywhere, you're not going anywhere, so we're on the road tomorrow.
Come on, talk it up a bit, Rich. Yeah. It's still the tour.
The tour is still the tour. So there's got a lot to talk about today. We had stage one, won by Rowan Dennis, a young Australian. I'm kicking myself I didn't tip him last night, because I thought about him yesterday and I thought I must tip him, because he and Tom Dumoulin, I thought, were the young pretenders who could topple Cancellara and Tony Martin.
Do we want our little snapshot roundup?
News roundup, Lionel.
Okay, well, it was stage one of the Tour de France, a 13.8 kilometre time trial in Utrecht, won by Rowan Dennis, the Australian, breaking the fastest ever average speed for a Tour de France time trial. That's been held by Chris Boardman since Lille in 1994. He rode for 55.2 kilometres an hour over 7.2 kilometres. Rowan Dennis went faster than that, so that gives some kind of context, particularly when you think double the distance, near enough. Biggest result for Dennis this season. He won the Tour Down Under, second in the Paris-Nice prologue when he was beaten by Mikhail Kwiatkowski. He led the Dauphiné after the team time trial, but this is by far the biggest victory of his career on his very first day as a Tour de France rider. A little fun bonus feature I was going to do daily as the Tour unfolds, the Big Four GC. We're obsessed about the Big Four, aren't we? Well, I am. That's going to be the story of the race.
But what do you want to call them? Because I've dubbed them the Cuatro Galácticos,
which is Spanish. What should we call them?
In France, they're calling them les Quatre Fantastiques or something. The Fantastic Four.
The Fab Four.
We'll call them the Fab Four. So the Fab Four GC. Vincenzo Nibali currently leads. Chris Froome is 7 seconds back. Alberto Contador 15 seconds back and Nairo Quintana 18 seconds back. But if you look at the results as a whole, really it was Thibaut Pinot who had the best day of the long list of GC contenders.
We'll talk about the Big Four, the Fab Four, a bit later on. And we'll also talk about Lars Boom and his almost exclusion from the Tour after a health check revealed low cortisol levels. Bit of a scandal, bit of a controversy there, and which sort of blew up after we recorded our Eve of the Tour podcast. We didn't talk about it in our podcast yesterday, but we will talk about that. And Daniel has some information on what went on there. And he spoke to Jonathan Vauters, I think, as well about that.
Follow us on Twitter at cycling_podcast or on our website, thecyclingpodcast.com.
But Rowan Dennis, now he is the rider who swapped from Garmin to BMC mid-season last year. Garmin must be, I mean, I don't think he really fitted in there all that well, did he? But they must be kicking themselves a little bit given the progress he's made since and the talent that he's now showing.
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head there, really. I don't think there was a question about his talent, but more of a question about the environment. And I think Jonathan Vauters said at the time, rather than keep a rider who wasn't fitting so well there and who clearly was going to move away, they took the decent thing, really. Quite a rare thing to let a rider go before the end of the season, but he rode the Vuelta, I think. So he rode the Vuelta for BMC and bedded in well. And his results this season that I've just run through, you know, he has been, if there was such a thing as most improved rider of the year, Rowan Dennis would be in the mix for that so far.
And we've been fascinated in the past by his temperament, or to be more precise, his temper, haven't we?
He's described as hyperactif on the French Wikipedia, I noticed.
He's very hot-headed, we've said this before. I chatted briefly this morning to Marco Pinotti, the former Italian rider who's become a sort of technical consultant at BMC, and we spoke about Dennis's temper, and Marco said, well, you know, I worked with him a bit last year, didn't really see much evidence of it. And then got to the Tour of Belgium this year, and I think there was a time trial that Rowan Dennis narrowly didn't win. And there, Marco said that all mystery about all of these rumours and stories about Dennis's temper quickly dissipated, because there he saw it in full flush, I think.
I did an event with him just outside London a few weeks ago. He came over for that, and the first time I chatted to him properly, I found him very open, very expansive on talking about, you know, the paths available to Australian riders in particular, because of course he's not part of the Orica Green Edge setup either, and he was actually pretty critical of that setup and how it doesn't work for some riders, including obviously him. You know, he's following a slightly different path. He was greeted, I noticed, embraced by Cadel Evans at the finish, and I think he rode the Vuelta with him, of course, last year, and they developed quite a close relationship. Evans is mentoring him, I think, a little bit. He does have ambitions to become a Grand Tour contender, to sort of evolve over the years into a stage race rider, which is a path we've seen others following, of course.
And what will be very intriguing is to see how he manages to dovetail with, well, Van Garderen at this race, TJ Van Garderen. He's declared he's going to support Van Garderen, but also next year with the speculated arrival of Richie Porte. So there are going to be three riders there with sort of honed and proven ability in time trials, but also with great potential to do well in stage races in the general classification. So it could get a little bit crowded in there at BMC in that GC department.
Richie Porte, a bit of a disappointing ride today. I think you're looking to these guys to see how they've, you know, recovered from the Giro. He obviously came out of the Giro with injuries from crash and so on, and questions over his condition. And Dave Brailsford was raving about Richie Porte in the first half of the season, saying he was the world's number one rider in the first part of the season, which he was, and incredibly consistent. And to only finish 65th in a time trial like that should have really suited him, you know, that could be because he's here purely to support Chris Froome. But we've seen in the past that Richie Porte has come with personal ambitions too. And, you know, that year, 2013, when he supported Chris Froome, he was wanting to do well, and he did ride well in that time trial that came sort of midway through the second week.
And I think two factors that show that performance in an even less flattering light. One, Richie Porte went out pretty early today, and the riders who did go out early, as we'll discuss later, the likes of Quintana, Pino, tended to do much better. The wind picked up later in the day, and it certainly did favour those riders who went early. Secondly, I imagine that most of the direct supporters, most of the teams will have stressed the importance of all of their riders doing good time trials today, because we have the stage over the cobbles coming on Tuesday. And as we've mentioned before, it's very important that the teams get a good position in the convoy, and that will depend on where their riders are placed on general classification. So it was important for multiple riders on teams to ride well today.
In which case, Team Sky overall probably be a bit disappointed. Their best rider was Geraint Thomas, down in 12th. So, you know, they've got to move up over the next couple of days, and opportunities to do so may be limited. That is certainly a consideration, and it's one that all the teams talked about last year as well. Any other performance they catch your eye in particular, Lionel?
Well, I think it was Thibaut Pinot, really. I mean, to have been on the podium last year, and to be, what was he, 18th in the stage?
18th in the stage, which, you know, he was ahead of Peter Sagan and TJ Van Garderen as well, you know, who's part of that second string of GC riders that we talk about, the fourth to seventh gang, the Zabeldia gang.
Yeah, but we're talking also of the Zabeldia gang, really. Look at Wilco Kelderman and Robert Hessink ninth and 11th, you know, the Team Lotto Jumbo's Bishops moving diagonally into Bauke the top
Mollema as well.
Well, Bauke Mollema's riding for Trek.
Yeah, I know, but he's another of the Zubeldia gang.
He's another of Zubeldia gang who's in chess parlance very much a bishop. Excellent at moving a long way diagonally, but not necessarily a long way in the right direction. Stretch that analogy probably a little too far. But I think what Daniel says is key. The big hitters for the overall in Paris were all off last, or most of them were off last. Thibaut Pinot wasn't Francis Dujeux's last rider on the road. It was Arnaud Démare who went in the sort of GC group, and that did give Pinot a little bit of an advantage in terms of not riding in the windiest conditions.
And Quintana as well. Quintana went off at 3 o'clock exactly. Pinot went off at 3:47, and that was it was around an hour and a half ahead of the trio of Contador, Froome, and Nibali. And I thought Nibali won the battle between those three quite clearly, although it was only a 7 second advantage. He's probably the rider there with the least time trialing pedigree, and I was very impressed by how he was riding. I mean, we've said in the past that prologues do give important revealing pointers as to how guys have come into the Tour de France and how their form is. This was even longer than a prologue, so it should have been even more telling. What it has told us is that those three are probably very closely matched, but Nibali might just have the edge in terms of form.
And a quick mention for Simon Yates, the young British rider on Orica Green Edge, 33rd. A really decent performance. It didn't concede much time at all. And, you know, they're playing down the possibilities of the Yates twins going for GC. But they were asked in the press conference, you know, why not? And Matt White, the director, said it would be irresponsible of the team to put pressure on them to ride for GC. That's not to say that they're not going to try and ride for GC. That's not to say that... I mean, Simon Yates was adamant that he will lose time in the first 9 days. He doesn't think it'll be difficult for him to lose time. And if he does, fine. But if he doesn't, he's there, and he's potentially in the mix. Who knows what could happen?
And now, Le Pédaleur de Charme, supported by British Eurosport.
Okay, you heard our new jingle there, the daily Pédaleur de Charme, presented by British Eurosport, and they are sponsoring a daily prize at the Tour de France, the British Eurosport Pédaleur de Charme. This is something we're going to do every day. We're going to award a Pédaleur de Charme T-shirt to the rider who is awarded each day the Pédaleur de Charme Award. And we had a nomination from a friend of the podcast, Moyin Islam, suggested the first star today, Daniel Tekle-Haminot, the Eritrean rider who rides for MTN Quebec. He was first man down the start ramp. A historic occasion as the first Eritrean to ride the Tour, first black African to ride the Tour. He seems like a very worthy winner of the first Pédaleur de Charme. He is a charming pedaler. So let's present that award. One of us will be dispatched to the MTN Quebec bus tomorrow to present him with the T-shirt. We'll try and get a photograph of that as well. Daniel's very distracted because Christian Prudhomme, the director of the tour, has appeared in our vision. Daniel, what's he doing?
He's waiting for someone to unlock their bike. I'm quite surprised he hasn't come over, Prudy. I don't think he's seen us. He usually would, wouldn't he?
That can be the only explanation.
Yeah.
a wave.
A wave.
A royal wave. Lionel, you had a little story. I think you were at the start for Daniel Tekle-Haminot.
Well, yeah, as you heard right at the top of the show, intro was the sound of the crowd cheering as Daniel Tekle-Haminot went down the start ramp. I just wanted to go and witness that, really. And as I was stood there, a man was looking really sort of quite proud, and as he turned towards me, he sort of had tears running down his cheeks, and sort of I said to him, "Oh, very big day," and he said, "Yeah, very big day for African cycling," and then he introduced me to the president of Rwandan Cycling Federation, Aimable Bayingana. Had a bit of a chat with
him. That's great pronunciation. Have you practiced that?
I have practiced that. Yeah. I listened to how he said his own name when I spoke to him, and I wrote it out phonetically.
Rob Hatch should be very impressed by that.
Well, I didn't want a sort of, you know, a roll of the eye.
What was his name again, Lionel?
His name was Aimable Bayingana.
And what did he have to say?
Well, he's from Rwanda, obviously, which he gave me the impression like neighbouring with Eritrea, and I had to sort of look on a map and just check. And I mean, they're a long, long way away from each other, and yet there is this kind of huge pride that Africa is making inroads in cycling, and they see the MTN Quebec team as a pathway to get people who currently would find it very difficult to get into cycling purely because of the cost of bikes and the infrastructure and the lack of coaches he was talking about and the lack of kind of technical expertise. They're learning at quite a fast rate, but they're obviously a long way behind Europeans in terms of their knowledge of how cycle racing works. But the Tour of Rwanda is now quite a big race on the continent of Africa, one of the biggest races there. Just talking to him and just getting the sense of how important the presence of the MTN Quebeca team is, and with two black Africans, and it feels a bit weird to kind of break it down by race. You know, we've had white Africans riding the Tour de France, but there is a real barrier there. There's a difference between somebody from Chris Froome or Daryl Impey's type of background making it across to ride in an event like the Tour de France, and somebody like Daniel Tekle-Hymenot. And of course, he went through the UCI's school of cycling, for want of a better description. I'm not sure exactly what they call it. But
The UCI Cycling Centre. But this is something that we don't actually give the UCI enough credit for. We whinge about the UCI being intransigent and not being quick enough to act on things and taking the wrong decisions. But this has actually been a big success, this project. We've got other riders here. Eduardo Sepúlveda from Argentina is here. And the field is looking a lot more cosmopolitan than it did a few years ago. And Tekle-Hymenot is also a product of that cycling centre. Gebremariam Grame, the Ethiopian who rode at the Giro d'Italia recently as well. So that is something...
Chris Froome himself.
Chris Froome himself. So that is something that the UCI deserves a little bit of a pat on the back for, I think.
The president of Rwandan Cycling was talking about Chris Froome, and I asked, does he consider Chris Froome to be British or African? And I suppose one of the slightly regrettable things for Froome was that he wasn't the first British Tour winner, but he isn't considered the first African Tour winner either. But he, a marble at Bayangana, he was adamant. He said, Chris Froome is both African and British.
It's going to be an interesting story, isn't it? Subplot, the whole MTN Quebeca one.
Yeah, I don't expect Tekle-Hymenot and Kudus's compatriot to necessarily pull up any trees, although Kudus is an incredibly talented climber. I think his problem will be getting to the bottom of the climbs, but certainly it's a major breakthrough to have both of them in the race.
And he's 21 years old as well, very young.
Yeah. And
youngest guy in the race, I think.
Yes, he is. And the political situation at the moment isn't great in Eritrea, so hopefully they'll give people back there something to cheer about over the next few weeks.
Well, I spoke to one of the Eritrean fans because there was a gaggle of them at the start cheering their riders and making a lot of noise and sheltering from the sun underneath umbrellas that said I heart Eritrea. And they live locally. They said that there are Eritreans throughout Europe who will be out in numbers throughout the 3 weeks of the tour to support the riders. But, you know, they were obviously incredibly excited and enthusiastic for their participation in this race, and said that the race is broadcast back in Eritrea and that people will be following it very closely. Big following for cycling there, of course.
During the Tour de France, listen twice a day to the Telegraph Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar. There is all the latest interviews and analysis from every stage in the evening show. And in the morning, Monday to Friday, Kilometer Zero will take you inside the tour in the company of the podcast team, Richard Moore, Daniel Fripp, and Lionel Burney.
So late last night, the night before the Tour de France got underway, Friday evening, quite a familiar sort of scenario, having dinner, and news breaks that it's not a doping scandal, it's a case involving Lars Boom, the Dutch rider, joined Astana this year, rode for Belkin last year and won stage 5 last year over the cobbles of the Tour de France. He's joined Astana this year, is a key support man for Vincenzo Nibali, especially on that cobbled stage, which this year comes on Tuesday, stage 4. He registered low cortisol levels in a sort of pre-tour health check carried out by the MPCC, the Movement for Credible Cycling, of which Astana were members until today. Under their rules, which are entirely voluntary, it's a voluntary organisation, Astana were one of 14 teams that were members of the MPCC as of this morning. Under their rules, Boom should have been withdrawn from the race. They were too late to field a replacement, and so Astana faced the prospect of starting the tour with 8 riders. They opted instead to ignore the MPCC rule, leave the MPCC, and start with Bohm regardless. Well, we imagine that they will leave the MPCC. I'm not sure that that's finally confirmed yet.
Or be expelled, indeed.
Or be expelled. I think they've effectively resigned from the MPCC by ignoring the rule and fielding Lars Bohm. Daniel, you were speaking to a few people at the start about this case, including Jonathan Vauters. What did you find out?
Well, the first thing to say is that the cortisol test is a health test. It's not a doping test. So, and much like the old hematocrit tests, which you used to establish a 50 limit above which there was an indication that it might be due to doping, but it might also be due to physiological factors. And with this test, if someone's cortisol level drops below a fixed level that the MPCC have fixed together with the French Federation, it could mean several things. It could mean that the rider is taking cortisone, which in certain instances is legal, so nothing necessarily wrong with that. Can also be cortisone is obviously containing a lot of different medications, which again can be used legally, or it can mean a rider is using cortisone illegally. But it can also mean that a rider is very stressed or has some kind of problem with their endocrine system, their hormonal system, and it can be perfectly natural. The reason that it is referred to as a health test is that low cortisol can also be quite dangerous. The doctor for the Française des Jeux or FDJ team was on French TV earlier talking about the danger of riders with low cortisol crashing and their body really not kicking in to the process that it should and naturally would if they were healthy, and this can be quite dangerous. I spoke to Jonathan Vauters about some of the issues that arose from this minor scandal or storm in a teacup earlier.
Stushy, we call it in Scotland.
And Jonathan Vauters, of course, not only is he the manager of the Cannondale Garmin team, one of
Cannondale Garmin,
them. We haven't seen much of them so far in this Tour de France, the Cannondale.
I think you said Cannondale Carmen.
Okay. Well, anyway, that team, the Americans, you know,
the green
with the diamonds on their jumpers. One of the founding teams of the MPCC, but also Jonathan and cortisone go back a long way because, of course, in the 2001 Tour de France, Jonathan got a very nasty bee sting in his eye or on an eyelid and wasn't able to continue the Tour de France because he wasn't allowed to take cortisone, which would have resolved the issue. Anyway, I spoke to Jonathan today about whether the Bohm story is a further blow to the credibility of the MPCC and also just about the issue of cortisone use in general.
Listen, it's a voluntary organization. You know, if you volunteer to be a part of it, you have to abide by the rules of it. It's really that simple. We have chosen to be a team that volunteers to be a part of it and abide by the rules of part of it for 8 years, and that's our choice. I don't think it's losing any credibility as an organization itself. It's unfortunate that it's losing pieces. I mean, that I do feel is unfortunate. We're not going anywhere. We'll continue to be a part of it. But listen, it started out, and whatever, I think when we started out as a member in 2007, it was basically, you know, a bunch of French teams and us, and if it ends up being a bunch of French teams and us again, like, that's fine by me. It was fine by me back then. Still is.
And you have full faith in the cortisol test and the whole premise of the cortisol test and, you know, the reasons that it is such a key part of the MPCC guidelines.
I think you have to look at, like, is there an effort for sort of the greater good of the sport going on here? And I think there is. Is there a certain, you know, is the cortisol test a perfect predictor of, you know, if someone has used exogenous cortisone or not? No, it's not. It's not absolutely perfect. Any doctor will tell you that. There are reasons that your cortisol level goes up and down naturally. But end of the day, I think that the broader perspective, saying, you know, we'd like to eliminate, you know, abuse of TUEs and overuse of cortisone or whatever, that I think that broader picture is worth every once in a while somebody, you know, being unable to race. Maybe an adjustment could be made in that, you know, you could do it a day earlier so that if there was a replacement rider, you could bring in a replacement rider. I mean, maybe. You know, listen, cortisone's a complicated thing because it has a lot of legitimate uses. I mean, if you think about it, going back to 2001 when my face swelled up like a, you know, balloon with a bee sting, that was a case where there was a completely and totally legitimate use for cortisone. the tricky part about it is how do we make sure that cortisone is, you know, very occasionally used for very legitimate medical reasons and prevent its abuse. That's a very tricky line. I don't have a perfect answer for that, but I think MPCC basically cuts it about right, just saying like, listen, we understand that you might have a medical issue and that you need to take cortisone, so just don't race. Like, it's no accusation, just when you're done with your medical issue, come back. I think it's really simple, really.
Okay, so that was Jonathan Vauters, general manager of the Cannondale Garmin team. Interesting as ever on the subject of the MPCC in particular, quite defensive of the MPCC because its credibility has certainly come under scrutiny, attack, I suppose. You know, Lotto Jumbo left recently, Bardiani have also left, teams have been deserting. Not all the World Tour teams, of course, are members. Team Sky, BMC, Trek, among the teams that are not members of the MPCC. And certainly there's a feeling, I think, among some people that rules should be enforced equally across the board or not at all. MPCC, does it have a future? Obviously, Jonathan Vauters thinks so and would like to believe so. But anything else about Lars Boom?
Obviously, the reasons for this low cortisol level are what we really want to find out. And what actually happened, or what I'm led to believe happened from people at Astana, is that Lars Boom arrived, I think, on Wednesday or Thursday, or probably Wednesday, in the team hotel in Utrecht. He does take and has admitted taking an asthma medication. It's a bronchodilator, which contains a glucocorticoid. It's completely legal. It doesn't require a TUE, but one of the side effects of this product can be a fall in cortisol level. And Boom arrived on Thursday. He had this test. He didn't say anything to the Astana medical staff. And then when yesterday afternoon he learned that his level was low and that he, under the rules of the MPCC, should really sit out the race, he informed the Astana management that he had taken more of the bronchodilator, the medication, this week than would usually be the case. He'd pretty much taken double his usual dose, and that, he believed, was probably the reason for the low cortisol level. They were obviously not particularly happy. Their Italian doctor, Emilio Magni, of the Astana team, was not particularly impressed. He would have liked to have known this earlier, but that was what happened, and they have acted accordingly. Vinokourov obviously took the decision that, you know, they were gonna flout the MPCC rules and carry on, and he was gonna ride.
I think it's important just to point out, you know, the MPCC is a voluntary organisation. The rule about cortisol levels is not a UCI rule, or it's not a WADA rule, you know, so this is a situation where cycling is trying to impose an even stricter code on its athletes than any other sport would do. And I think that's where the difficulties come in, because in trying to do the right thing, cycling ends up sort of shooting itself in the foot a little bit on the eve of the Tour de France. We have this situation. You say there, you know, we don't even know really what to describe it as, because it's difficult to know how it's being interpreted by people who are watching and reading about the sport on the eve of the biggest race. You know, is it a scandal? Is it doping? Is it, drug related?
I mean,
but the perception is very different to everything that you've just.
And the fact that it's Astana amplifies it too. Had this been a rider on Cofidis or Lamprey or some other team, it wouldn't have been the story that it was.
No, and I think when Daniel, running through Lars Boehm's sort of explanation there, you know, the talk about medicines and bronchodilators and all of this kind of stuff, it takes sport, professional sport, into areas that are not necessarily the sort of areas that a lot of fans want to see it go into. And so that's where it's a real tricky one, because, as I say, the MPCC has got, I keep adding the extra C, don't I? MPCC, no, I don't. No, it's fine.
Two C's.
Yeah. It's
a way to remember it is credible cycling. That's what the C's stand for.
The MPIC, the Movement for Incredible Cycling.
Whose members include Carmen Gannondale.
The heat is getting to us here, I think, in Utrecht. The problem is that having two codes and having a code that is tighter than the WADA code isn't necessarily very helpful in the big picture for cycling. And really, you know, Astana's withdrawal just rides a coach and horses through the entire organisation. You can't have a situation where some of the teams are members and some aren't. It just makes it pointless.
And certainly speaking to a lot of the teams today, and you can almost see this really if you look at the teams that are members, the preponderance now of pro continental teams rather than World Tour teams. One suspects that a lot of those teams became members in order to facilitate getting wild cards for big races, and certainly several teams, team managers suggested to me today that they do come under quite a lot of pressure from ASO to align themselves with the MPCC, obviously another French organisation. And it is a cloak. It has been used, I think, as a sort of porous sort of tissue paper cloak of respectability by a lot of teams, and which they have taken off at the first convenient moment in many cases. You know, this is, I think, the fourth team it will be to leave in the last few months after Lampre, Lotto, Jumbo, Bardiani, and there was one other as well.
When organisations try to impose their own additional rules, they can run into trouble. Like the British Olympic Association had the rule that they banned any athlete who'd ever served a doping ban from competing at the Olympic Games. WADA sort of acted against that and appealed it to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. And the point of the WADA code is that it is an international code, and it will only work if everybody who signs up to it agrees to the rules within the WADA code. Now, there are probably decent arguments for doing some of the things that MPCC are proposing, which is curbing tramadol use, monitoring cortisol levels and so on, for them to become part of the WADA code. It perhaps makes sense for that to happen, but why doesn't the sport push as a whole for that to happen rather than have this kind of factional response?
Just on the cortisol levels, Rich, I imagine yours are quite low, because apparently tall people have low, I mean, I know your cholesterol is quite high, but I think your cortisol might be quite low, because apparently this is one of the arguments put forward today by the Astana team doctor Emilio Magni, mentioned to a colleague, an Italian colleague, that tall people tend to have low cortisol.
And Boom is quite tall.
He is tall, yeah.
And my cortisol levels feel very low at the moment. These last couple of days feel very low, but that could just be the heat.
Another curious coincidence, perhaps, but three of the riders, not many riders have failed these cortisol tests or failed or come in under the limit. Three of them have a history with the same team. What was the Rabobank team became Belkin. And so that's Lars Boom, George Bennett, who was prevented from starting the Giro d'Italia, and Teo Boss was prevented from starting the Vuelta a España.
That's a very interesting observation, actually. I'm not sure of anything that, but maybe, of course, that team, which is now Lotto, NL, Jumbo, have withdrawn from the MPCC. Maybe we should try and speak to them someday about that. Anyway, shall we wrap it up there? Let's come back tomorrow and discuss stage two. Will Rowan Dennis still be in the yellow jersey? Who will win tomorrow's stage? Who will win tomorrow's stage, Lionel?
Well, it finishes then on a basically a bridge in the middle of the North Sea. Pan flat finish.
Any riders very good on bridges?
Well, I was thinking, you know, Mark Cavendish. You know, he crosses the Irish Sea over to the Isle of Man a lot. You know, it's perfect.
There's not a bridge to the Isle of Man. You do know that.
Is there not?
No.
We've got tomorrow, I think we're going to be talking, unfortunately, about crashes, and we've got some cracking content on crashes I've already got stored up. The wind is going to be a huge factor, isn't it? I've heard different things today. Some journalists, some of our colleagues from these parts have suggested it's going to be very windy. Others have said no, it's not going to be windy tomorrow, but wait till we get to Le Havre later in the first week, and there's a long portion on the coast that day, and that is going to be absolute carnage. But I think Cavendish is in great shape. There was some big news today about his future, whether he's going to stay at Etix Quickstep or not, but it can't be revealed in tonight's podcast. I'm going to save that.
Okay, stay tuned, folks. We'll be back again tomorrow. That's Sunday, and then from Monday we'll have our morning show, Kilometre Zero. That will start on Monday to Friday in the mornings, regular show, rounding up the action in the evenings. Wednesday we'll also be doing a live show from the press room. you can tweet your questions and so on. Keep your nominations coming in for Pedaleur de Charme, hashtag Pedaleur, and we will choose on a Pedaleur de Charme tomorrow evening. In the meantime, thanks very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thanks. We'll be back tomorrow with high cortisol, low cholesterol.
For the best analysis, discussions and interviews from the 2015 Tour de France, listen to the Telegraph Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar.